I would say 70% of people can't afford their basic needs. People have become poor. It has become much more difficult for many Afghans to buy food. And by winter, the situation would even get worse, I believe.
Previously, we had jobs and we could save for our winter. But now, I work only one day in a 10-day period. Some nights, we only eat bread with tea. We could use the aid if there were any.
According to the United Nations, Afghanistan is the sixth most affected country in the world, enduring the consequences of climate change. Immigration, job losses and cropland destruction are the results of climate change. These problems are aggravated by recent political conflicts and severely impact the country's economy.
The devastating results of climate change have added to the problems Afghans are facing. International help for this winter could ease the situation for people already grappling with poverty. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
Iran has recently unveiled the newest version of its homegrown missile defense system, Bavar 373, which is said to have taken one step closer to the Russian-made S-400 anti-aircraft weapon system. During the test fire, a stationary target was detected at a range of more than 450 kilometers by the optimized radar of the missile system and was tracked at a range of about 405 kilometers and was hit at a range of more than 300 kilometers. The long-range missile has solid fuel and was evaluated during operation for the first time. The detection radar range of the Bavar 373 system has increased from 350 to 450 kilometers, and its engagement radar range has increased from 260 to 400 kilometers. The Bavar 373 long-range air defense system is capable of detecting up to 100 targets, tracking 60 of them and engaging with 6 concurrently.
All air defense systems are divided into 3 main categories based on their missions and operations, including long-range, middle-range, and short-range systems. Bavar 373 is a long-range missile system. Only 4 or 5 countries in the world have the technology to manufacture such a strategically important missile system. These countries do not even allow other countries to master such a technology, and if they provide any country with such a missile system, they will operate and overhaul the systems themselves, and operational and communicational codes are not given to the using country.
A distinguishing feature of Bavar 373 is its vertical launching system with square launchers, mostly used for air defense on warships. The system's missile range has increased from 200 to 300 kilometers, and its engagement altitude has increased from 27 to 32 kilometers.
The great achievement which has been made as a result of the production of Bavar 373, aside from its defensive goals, is that this project has institutionalized the path of developing anti-aircraft air defense system inside the country. It means that we're now highly capable of producing any form of anti-air defense system inside the country with the help of our own universities, startup companies, and Iranian youth and specialists. By using Bavar 373 missile system, we can counter different types of missiles, bombers, and ballistic missiles.
The Bavar air defense system employs 3 different types of missiles to hit targets at various altitudes. It's been able to hit targets just 5 minutes after fire at an altitude of 43,000 feet.
Iran maintains that its military might poses no threat to regional countries, stressing that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence. Saman Kujurip, Tehran.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, We're going to be looking at a question that kind of gets asked. That is regarding the utensils that we use to eat. As you know, Islam is a perfect religion. It has rules for everything. A lot of the foundation for Islamic manners and behavior is the sunnah and the behavior, the words, even the silence of the infallible imams and the Holy Prophet. In the context of this general rule, we ask whether is there anything specific that has been mentioned regarding these utensils? Today everybody uses forks, plates, spoons to eat. Is there something about this in the Quran and Hadith or not? And if there is, what should these utensils be made out of? Iron, wood, what? In order to answer this question, we can say that from a purely jurisprudential and fiqhi point of view, it's okay to eat in any kind of utensil, except when the utensil is made of gold or silver. Right? This is something which has been specifically prohibited. But other than that, as long as the utensils are clean, ritually pure, tahir, there's no problem in eating from them. There is a certain reports that the Prophet ﷺ used a wooden utensil to eat. At the same time, there's nothing that would indicate that using a specific type of material to construct the utensil from which we eat is better or not. So this hadith has been transmitted by Tabarsi, the famous historian, in his book Makarimul Akhlaq, page 31. That doesn't indicate that, that it's, something recommended or prohibited or anything like that. Its permissibility can be derived from this hadith, but not necessarily its, maybe not necessarily its recommendation, or its, the fact that it's better. This is the answer to this question. We should also like to, kind of add that a lot of, so it's a habit of a lot of people in Islamic countries, to eat with their hands. Like, for example, instead of using fork or spoon, a lot of Muslims, a lot of Muslims, they eat with their hands. Like, for example, in the South Asian countries, a lot of Muslims, they eat with their hands, and this is something they consider it good. And, a lot of people say that this is something that, it helps in the digestion of the food. And, it also adds to the, the tastiness of the food. This is okay. There's nothing wrong with that, provided that, the hands are clean. Washing the hands before eating is something recommended. The hands are ritually pure, they're tahir, and there's no ritual impurement on the hands. There's nothing wrong with this. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the use of utensils in the consumption of food. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. an introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, pleasure and perfection. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone, you're listening to A to Z program. I'm your host Hossein Hinzano, and in today's lesson, we're talking about pleasure and perfection. Now, man's true perfection is the ultimate existential degree and the most sublime perfection which man is able to reach. All other perfections are like preliminaries and are organic or relative. The being preliminary perfections hinges on the effect in making man reach his true perfection, even though the latter might be of various degrees. As a consequence, true perfection is man's genuine desire, and the desirability of other objects is minor and depends on their involvement in reaching true perfection. Likewise, the pleasure desired by man is one derived from reaching true perfection. Other pleasures are like, you know, preliminary steps, because as already pointed out, genuine pleasure is derived from fulfilling a genuine desire. Now, consequently, recognition of true perfection depends on the recognition of genuine pleasure. Conversely, recognition of genuine pleasure hinges on recognition of true perfection. As genuine pleasure provides the greatest pleasure possible, and recognition of genuine pleasure is accompanied by recognition of something which can provide man with the greatest and the most sublime and the most enduring of all pleasures. For this reason, if we get to know the most pleasurable beings, we will also recognize the genuine pleasure and the true perfection.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. We were talking about pleasure and perfection. And we are saying that no matter how a man tries in his life, so long as he lives in this world, he is always after such of perfection. He wants to be complete. He wants to be perfect. And one of his ways to do this is for him to search for ways of pleasuring himself. He needs pleasures to come towards his side, always after the pleasures. And he is also always against the pains and the agonies of life. He's trying so hard not to meet pain. He's trying so hard not to meet any kind of agony. Thus, it is befitting to ponder over the reality of pleasure and the reason behind differences in its degrees. It has different degrees. A pleasure can be one-sided. A pleasure can be this amount, like let's say a pleasure can be 20% in this particular season, and goes up to 40% in the other season, just with the same thing. So it differs in degrees. Now, so that we could recognize the most sublime and the most enduring pleasures of man. Now, what the man is experiencing within himself and is interpreting as pleasure is a conceptual state overcoming him when he reaches a desired objective. Provided that he considers that objective as desirable and that we beware of it and pay heed upon reaching it. He is always after reaching it. He is always after gaining that extra perfection, extra need of having to be perfect, of having to be complete. And he is always after that by doing what? By pulling all the pleasures towards his side and siding himself away, keeping himself far from any type of pain and agony. Thank you so much for following up on this program. Until next episode, we'll meet again, inshallah. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
While the U.S. regime accuses other countries of vote rigging, this regime itself has the most undemocratic and unhealthy election in the world. The influence played by a handful of billionaires in the midterms is a clear evidence to this fact. In this regard, we have provided different media views on this issue. Stay tuned for more. A huge amount of dark money now funds both super PACs and also more generally political interest groups. Earlier this year, the New York Times and ProPublica reported that 90-year-old Barr Seed, a secretive Chicago manufacturing tycoon, had donated $1.6 billion to the Marble Freedom Trust to push its agenda of securing conservative judicial appointments up and down the ranks of state and federal judiciary. This is a long-term investment that over the coming years and decades will buttress conservatives as they groom the next generation of right-wing legal scholars and work to ensure the election of political who will nominate ever more right-wing figures to judicial benches. That money, the largest one-off political donation in U.S. history, instantly made Seed hardly a household figure in U.S. public life, one of the country's most important arbiters determining the fate of the legal system, and by extension, the country's regulatory edifice, its environmental policies, access to rights, voting rights, the fate of gun control laws, civil rights, and so much more over the coming decades. And it catapulted him into the top tier of politically active billionaires, joining a club that includes Charles Koch on the right, George Soros on the left, and a handful of others. But modern U.S. billionaires don't confine themselves to setting up or funding think tanks and other organizations intended to shape the public debate on key issues. It has now been 12 years since the Citizens United Supreme Court ruling opened the floodgates to corporate donations and super PAC monies coming into elections. And as a result, each election cycle since then has seen the growing consequences of this decision, as the super wealthy use their money to prop up pet candidates and determine crucial citizens' initiatives. In 2022, billionaire plutocrats, the U.S. equivalent of oligarchy, poured vast amounts of money into political races. Americans for Tax Fairness, ATF, recently released a report which calculated that through the end of September, 445 billionaires had collectively donated close to $900 million to political candidates this election season. Among these, A handful, a mere 20, according to their report, made up the bulk of these contributions, between them donating more than $600 million. By the time the election was held on November 8, ATF estimated the total donations made by U.S. billionaires would top $1 billion. Indeed, in late October, the Washington Post calculated that the top 50 political donors had injected $1.1 billion into political races this expensive election season. Percent of these donations went to Republican Party candidates, although liberal billionaires George Soros and Michael Bloomberg also pumped huge sums into the elections, with the intent of shoring up Democratic congressional representation and pushing back against some of the anti-democracy forces coursing through the body politic these days. Sam Bankman-Fried, the young cryptocurrency guru, also donated tens of millions of dollars to pro-democratic PACs, presumably before his business empire suddenly crumbled in the first part of November. In 2022, largely out of the public eye, billionaire PayPal founder Peter Thiel bankrolled candidates like Arizona Senate hopeful Blake Masters and J.D. Vance, the newly elected senator from Ohio, to the tune of tens of millions of dollars. Building supply magnate Diane Hendricks spent $16 million propping up Ron Johnson's campaign for re-election as senator from Wisconsin, according to ATF data. The intervention was probably critical to sustaining the unpopular Johnson, arguably Donald Trump's most vocal apologist in the Senate, in the last weeks of the campaign as his Democratic opponent Mandela Barnes surged to within a point of victory in the election. Hendricks' donations came up on top of more than $20 million that she and fellow billionaires Dick and Liz Olihan donated to Johnson's campaign in 2016. What did these billionaires get from their investment? A pliant senator willing to use his public office to push for amendments to tax legislation that would save his billionaire patrons hundreds of millions of dollars in reduced taxes. In New York, Ronald Lauder of the Estee Lauder Cosmetics fortune spent $11 million boosting GOP gubernatorial candidate Lee Zeldin in his race against Democratic incumbent Kathy Hochul. The money didn't ultimately swing the election to Zeldin, but it did contribute to significantly narrowing the gap between the two candidates, and likely was influential in bringing out enough GOP voters to flip a critical number of states' congressional seats from the blue to red, results that might produce the margin of victory nationally for the GOP to regain control of the House of Representatives. In Los Angeles, mayoral hopeful Rick Caruso, a billionaire mall developer, has spent roughly $100 million of his own money in an advertising blitz that's eclipsed by a factor of roughly 13 to 1 Karen Bass's spending in the last month of the campaign and turned him into a viable candidate for taking the reins in City Hall. As of this writing, with slightly less than half the votes counted, Caruso has a 2% lead over Bass. The money injected into the political process by the super wealthy is just the tip of the corporate influence iceberg created by the Citizens United decision and told between super wealthy donors, corporations, and smaller donations. Nearly $17 billion was spent on the 2022 midterm elections, according to an analysis by Open Secrets. In the five most contested Senate races alone, $1.3 billion was burnt through. No other country on earth spends anywhere near as much during its election season. The disproportionate influence played by a handful of billionaires and by OPEC outside spending groups on the country's political system isn't healthy for democracy. Yes, the country dodged a bullet in the recent election by rejecting election deniers who sought to capture critical state offices in order to undermine the integrity of election systems.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Usually rats are associated with garbage and disease, but these rats are not the typical rodents. They are being trained in Tanzania for search and rescue operations. These are a breed called the African giant pouch rat, which is naturally a very curious creature. It can weigh up to around 1,500 grams and are known to have longer lifespans than other rats. Lead researcher at the Belgium-based non-profit company Apopo, Don O'Keen, says this species can live up to 10 years. This means that even after the 9 months of training, the rat will still have a long working career ahead. The size and agility of rats make them invaluable for search and rescue efforts.
So this is where the idea for the rats came in, because the rats are just as trainable as dogs. They've got a great sense of smell, and their small size and natural agility should hopefully make them really good in this scenario, where they could squeeze in small spaces and get closer to any victims.
The rescue rats began training in August last year at the Apopo's Training and Research Center. The rodents are fitted with tiny backpacks that enable real-time wireless audio-visual communication. When they find a potential victim, they pull a small handle hanging around their neck to let the rescue handlers know. The rats were trained to locate humans in mock disaster zones, such as aftermath of earthquakes. Apopo has already trained rats to detect landmines and sniff out tuberculosis. So much joy can be found in a bottle of luxury perfume, but parting with hundreds of dollars for such scents can take the shine off that experience. Now in Syria, a perfumer is helping people smell expensive without digging too deep into their pockets. One whiff of a fragrance is all a Syrian perfumer needs to recreate the scents of luxury brands for a fraction of a cost. That's very welcome in a country ravaged by years of foreign-backed militancy. Dozens of customers flock daily to his tiny store nestled in the historic bazaar of Damascus. They flash photos on their phones of high-end perfumes they want to replicate. He says all he has is his nose.
Here lies the secret of the profession and the brain power. I started training my nose to smell perfumes since I was 15 years old. I do not own high-end equipment. All I have is my nose, my brain power and expertise. That's all.
In the war-torn country, many people struggle to afford life's bare necessities, let alone perfume. With the local currency losing much of its value, Syrian employees reportedly make roughly $25 a month, on average a quarter of the price of a bottle of imported perfume. This perfumer sells his fragrances for about $6, drawing in a flow of clients from all walks of life. Some people believe the internet will soon make paper books a thing of the past. In Iraq, book lovers are fighting back. They have launched a book festival offering thousands of free books to encourage the Arab nation to read more. The festival is called Iraq Reads. It's attracted big crowds. Iraqis stood shoulder to shoulder behind long tables covered in books and flipped through hundreds of titles to find the one catching their interest. Some others gather on next to the stands to read under a tree, chat about their newest books, or listen to extracts of literature read aloud through a loudspeaker. One of the organizers says they aim to revive the culture of reading books, reading paper books.
It's a crisis all over the world, not only in Iraq. There is a crisis in terms of reading paper books. One of the goals for our festival is to revive the reading of paper books so that the electronic book does not become an alternative of the paper book.
As part of the festival, 70,000 books have been distributed for free across the country so far. The books covering a wide range of topics were donated by partner libraries. The festival is held in 7 provinces in the Arab country. You have probably seen penny farthings in old books and cartoons, the antique bicycle with one very large and one small wheel. Now, this peculiar bike actually brings fans together in Prague each year to show off their skills. The cyclists were all dressed in historical costumes as they rode in formation at Letno Park in Prague. The traditional one-mile race competition was also held to see who could go the fastest while keeping their balance. The riders, mostly elderly men, said they came there for just the fun of it. Penny farthings were invented around 1870 and were popular until models with two evenly sized wheels and chains were developed. Most bicycles today are based on this design.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Egypt is marking 100 years since the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun, a pharaoh who ruled more than 1,300 years B.C.
I was fascinated with the story myself, and every morning in which I was here to pick up our inspector when I was working on a dig in the Valley of the Kings, I would wander around the house trying to imagine what it was like if I had been here in 1922 and could have been a part of that. And now here we are, now that it's restored. I do hope that this will turn into a center of cultural interest for anyone and everyone who wants to visit Egypt and wants to hear more of the story about Howard Carter and the king.
In 1922, British Egyptologist Howard Carter and his team discovered Tutankhamun's nearly intact tomb. That was the start of what became a 10-year project to excavate and conserve more than 5,000 unique artifacts. Tutankhamun's reign lasted barely 9 years in the vast span of ancient Egyptian history. Although his successors tried to erase the king's record from history, the valuable discovery of his tomb has immortalized the boy king.
China is taking the final step in the construction of its Tiangong space station, the second permanently inhabited station in low Earth orbit after NASA's International Space Station. The second and last lab component of the station was launched on Monday. The uncrewed module is called Mengtian, which means dreaming of the heavens. The rocket carrying it blasted off from China's Space Launch Center on the coast of the southern island province of Hainan. The 23-ton Mengtian is an advanced lab and does not have space for sleeping and sanitation. Instead, it has more space to carry payloads for scientific studies. Fan Ping is the chief designer of the project. She says this is a special step towards space research.
I think the Mengtian lab module is quite special, as it is for experiment only, which can be seen as a dedicated studio. There are 13 scientific experiment racks in the module and 37 exposed loading stations outside the module, enabling astronauts to do more extravehicular loading experiments in the future.
The Mengtian module is the last building block of the T-shaped Tiangong station. It has to fly 400 kilometers to join the two-module combination already dispatched into space. Together, the three modules will construct the station, which is designed for a lifespan of at least 10 years.
It's always a tricky task to remember people's names at a party, but not in this particular gathering in Tokyo, where all the guests had the exact same name, Hirokazu Tanaka. 178 Hirokazu Tanakas came together on Saturday to set a new namesake gathering world record. Their ages spanned from 3 years old to 80. The Guinness World Record for the largest gathering of people with the same first and last name previously belonged to Martha Stewart. 164 people with that name came together in New York in 2005. In the Tanaka's gathering, every man was assigned an alias inspired by their hobbies, occupation, or favorite foods to tell them apart from others. One nicknamed by his birthplace says it's strange to meet so many people with the same name, obviously.
It's a strange feeling to know that there are nearly 200 people with the same name. To be honest, I'd presume there are more popular names out there like Suzuki and Sato. This achievement is really because of the efforts of our organizer.
The man who organized this gathering is a 53-year-old Hirokazu Tanaka who has worked for years to make this happen. He says his quest began in 1994 when he stumbled upon news about a baseball prodigy with the same name. After that, he began tirelessly scouring the nation for his namesakes. He then founded the Hirokazu Tanaka campaign that brought the men together and created a strange friendship among them. Thousands of baby turtles have been released into Peru's Amazon basin in an attempt to preserve the rainforest ecosystem. More than 6,000 hatchlings of three endangered species of turtles have been released into lakes and lagoons in Peru to help them repopulate. To make this happen, wildlife officials collected the eggs from their natural habitat and transferred them to artificial beaches until they hatched. The river turtles are considered vulnerable because for many years they have been killed for human consumption or kept as pets. Scientists are currently trying to conserve the Amazon to avoid catastrophic climate change, and Peru has the second largest share of the rainforest after Brazil. Another world record news. This time it has been set in Switzerland. A Swiss railway company has run the world's longest passenger train with a trip on one of the most spectacular tracks through the Alps. To celebrate its 175th anniversary, Switzerland's rail industry launched the world's longest ever passenger train, measuring around 2 kilometers. The electric train took almost an hour to cover around 25 kilometers over the UNESCO World Heritage Albula Line in eastern Switzerland. The Albula Line is famous for its endless swooping curves and steep descents. Rail enthusiasts lined the valley to watch the train's 100 cars snake through the Alps. Belgium and the Netherlands were the previous record holders for the world's longest passenger train. They used standard railway through the flat landscapes.
If you enjoy street art, then you'll probably like Iztapalapa district in Mexico's capital city. Nearly 300 neighborhoods in this area are beautifully painted with brightly colored murals for all to enjoy. Visitors can also ride a cable car and take a tour of the art from above. The district is home to nearly 7,000 murals and graffiti painted on all sorts of surfaces, including rooftops. Iztapalapa Murals is a project that was promoted by the Mexico City's mayor in 2018. The goal of the project was to recover and dignify public spaces through art and involve neighbors in its creation and conservation. Iztapalapa is one of the poorest municipalities in the capital, and the initiative aims to reduce neighborhood violence through public lighting of the murals during the night.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانه ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners, and welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. Here we have again, alhamdulillah, some of the students of Sevier International School with us in this session. And before we start the class, let me say hello to each of them. Salam, Hussein Ruhullah, and how are you?
Salam alaikum, sir.
Salam, salam.
I'm fine, how are you?
Oh, thank you. Alhamdulillah, I'm good. Welcome. And Hassan Nasrullah, how are you doing?
Salam alaikum, sir.
Salaam alaikum.
I'm fine, sir.
Okay.
How are you?
That's great. Thank you so much. Welcome. So, respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners, we really recommend you stay with us till the end of the session. Inshallah, you will benefit and we all will benefit from the verses of the Quran Kareem. So, brother Hassan and Hussein, today, inshallah, our topic is to work on Ayah 60 of Surah Al-Baqarah. And I really recommend our brothers and sisters who are listening to us right now, please grab your Quran, go to Surah Al-Baqarah, Ayah 60 of Surah Al-Baqarah, inshallah. Stay with us till the end of this session. We will have a short explanation and also, most importantly, we'll be working on the tajweed rules, important tajweed rules in this ayah. So before we start reciting it and explaining about it, let's listen to the recitation of this ayah.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
MashaAllah, what a nice recitation. I loved it. How about you?
Yes.
Thank you. So, now I will be, inshallah, reciting it. Make sure you repeat after me.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وإذ استسقى موسى لقومه فقلنا اضرب بعصاك الحجر وإذ استسقى موسى لقومه فقلنا اضرب بعصاك الحجر فانفجرت منه اثنتا عشرة عينا فانفجرت منه اثنتا عشرة عينا قد علم كل أناس مشربهم قد علم كل أناس مشربهم كلوا واشربوا من رزق الله ولا تعثوا في الأرض مفسدين كلوا واشربوا من رزق الله ولا تعثوا في الأرض مفسدين
الحمد لله. Thank you so much. Thank you Hassan and Hussein for practicing with our brothers and sisters. So, وَإِذِ اسْتَسْقَى مُوسَى لِقَوْمِهِ And when Prophet Moses عليه السلام prayed for water for his people, and he asked Allah Almighty to send some rain, okay? We said to Prophet Musa, Allah Almighty says, strike the rock with your staff, that walking stick, okay? Hit the water, okay? Hit the rock, okay? With your walking stick. Thereat, 12 fountains, okay? 12 fountains gushed forth from it. Fountains. Every tribe came to know its drinking place. And then Allah Almighty says, eat and drink of Allah's provision, the rizq, the blessings of Allah Almighty, okay? And do not act wickedly on the earth, causing corruption. So, look, Allah Almighty tells us to use the rizq of Allah Almighty, okay? And we should not be someone who is causing corruption. It means do not be kind of, be among those who are thankful, okay, to Allah Almighty because of the blessings. In this ayah, one thing I want to tell you, فَقُلْنَا ضُرِبْ بِعَصَاكَ الْحَجَرِ When Prophet Musa عليه السلام hit the rock with his staff, okay? فَانْفَجَرَتْ مِنْهُ اثْنَةَ عَشْرَةَ عَيْنَ 12 fountains of water gushed out. Is it a miracle or no?
Yes.
Yes, it's a miracle. One point I want to tell you, that the miracles and the magics, let's talk about them a little bit. Miracles are not the same as magics. Even they are completely different. Why? Because magics are things that people, they learn themselves and they try to find some tricks to do magics, okay? But miracles are taught by Allah Almighty. Look, Allah Almighty says, فَقُلْنَا ضُرِبْ بِعَصَاكَ الْحَجَرِ Allah Almighty says, do it and we will make it a miracle. فَانْفَجَرَتْ So Allah Almighty did it. Yes?
Yes.
So a miracle is something which is taught by Allah Almighty. Okay? But magics are people. Miracles are things that everyone cannot do it. Everyone cannot prove or show a miracle. But magics, everyone can learn it and do it. So miracles cannot be taught to anyone, okay? Special people. Prophets and imams. That's it. Okay? Now, you cannot go to a teacher like you go to Prophet. Oh, Prophet, teach me how to do miracles. Come on, it's not magic. That's different, okay? And miracle is something which is heavenly, but magic is something which is haram. It is forbidden. Okay? So, guys, I hope, inshallah, you refer to the Tafasir book, okay, for explanations. I just mentioned one point from this ayah. Now, let's go to the Tajweed rules, which is the main part of our discussion, our sessions. يبكي يسأل خالقه فأتاه الوحي فأشرق اقرأ اقرأ
Let's recite the Quran.
اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق
وإذ استسقى استسقى You have to pronounce it استسقى Because the third letter is having a fatha. We had a rule for Hamzatul Wasl. To pronounce Hamzatul Wasl, we have two rules. Actually, two cases. Either Hamzatul Wasl is with a word which is noun, or Hamzatul Wasl is with a word which is verb. This is a verb. With verbs, we have again two cases. We have to take a look at the third letter of the word. If the third letter of the word has a fatha or a kasra, then Hamzatul Wasl will be assigned with a kasra. E. Istasqa. Look, the third letter has a fatha. Or a kasra, again, you have to assign Hamzatul Wasl with kasra. But whenever you see that Hamzatul Wasl is there, and look at the third letter of the word. If the third letter of the word has a dhamma, a u sound, so Hamzatul Wasl will be assigned with
dhamma.
U. If the ta was two, not ta, two, you would have said ustasqa. Yes. Ustusqa. Okay? But since the letter ta has a fatha, so the fatha and kasra go in the same under the same rule, okay? You put a kasra. But now, idh, wa idh istasqa. Now, because we have, actually, idh is dhal sakin. There is a kasra, but in reality, dhal sakin, okay? Wa idh qala. وَإِذْ آتَيْنَا Look, it's the same word, okay? It is sakin. Then you have Hamzatul Wasl. Two sakin letters. A letter sakin plus Hamzatul Wasl sakin. So in this case, you put a kasra with the letter which is sakin, which is before Hamzatul Wasl. Dhal, yes? Put a kasra with dhal and join it with the letter seen. You skip Hamzatul Wasl here because you join two letters, two words, okay? Which Hamzatul Wasl occurs in the middle. So you do not say wa idhastasqa. Wa idhustasqa. No. Wa idhistasqa. We have a rule. Idh iltaqata sakinatain. When two sakin letters meet one another, okay? Hurrik bil kasr. Put a kasra at the first one for the first one and read it. Wa idhistasqa. Simple as that. Wa idhistasqa. Musa li qawmihi. There is a long sound. فَقُلْنَا إِضْرِب Okay, Hassan, I told you, you have to take a look at the third letter of the word, okay? Look at the third letter of the word, إِضْرِب.
Yes.
Does it have a kasra, fatha, dhamma?
Kasra.
Kasra. Yes. So you assign Hamzatul Wasl of this word with?
Kasra.
Kasra. إِضْرِب. If you start from the word إِضْرِب, you say إِضْرِب. But because you join them together, the previous word and this word, you skip Hamzatul Wasl. فَقُلْنَا الضُّرِيب There is no kasra for it. Now, فَقُلْنَا Noon has a long vowel sound. But next word starts with Hamzatul Wasl. We had a rule that if you have a mad letter plus Hamzatul Wasl and you have to skip Hamzatul Wasl, you also have to skip the mad sound. Put a short vowel sound with it. فَقُلْنَا ضُرِبْ Instead, you should say فَقُلْنَا ضُرِبْ Not نَا ضُرِبْ نَا ضُرِبْ Fast. نَضُرِبْ بِعَصَاكَ الْحَجَرُ There is a word صَلَى or صَلِي. What does it say?
Better to stop.
Better to stop. No way. That was قَلَى or قَلِي.
Better to go.
Better to go. Better to continue. You can stop here. But it's better to continue. فانفجرت نون ساكين plus فا rest of the letters إخفاء for sure. منهو منهو نون ساكين plus ها throat letters. Merge, hide, change, no rule. Which one?
No rule.
No rule, because ha is throat letter. Yes. Min husnata. So Hamzatul Wasl is skipped here. Min husnata. Ashrata aynan. But when you stop, Tanween Fatha is changed to Hassan? Changed to?
Alif Mat.
Alif Mat, Hassan. Ashrata ayna. If you stop here. It's better to continue because Sala we have here, yeah? Sada or Sali we have here. Now, قَدْ عَلِمَ كُلُّ أُنَاسٍ تَنْوِين plus ميم أُنَاسٍ مَشْرَبَهُمْ Yes? أُنَاسٍ مَشْرَبَهُمْ إِدْغَام, right? أُنَاسٍ مَشْرَبَهُمْ كُلُوا وَاشْرَبُوا مِنْ رِزْقِ اللَّهِ نُنْ سَاكِين plus رَا What rule is applied, Hussein? Hussein?
Merge
them, yes? Without غُنَّة yes, مِنْ رِزْقِ اللَّهِ Do not pronounce the noon. Join ميم to را مِن رِزْقِ اللَّهِ رِزْقِ قَاف has a كَسْرَة plus the word Allah. We said if the word Allah is preceded by a كَسْرَة, the letter لام of the word Allah is pronounced lightly.
Yes.
رِزْقِ اللَّهِ not رِزْقِ اللَّهِ.
Yes.
Right, Hassan? رِزْقِ اللَّهِ وَلَا تَعْثَوْ فِي الْأَرْضِ مُفْسِدِينَ Simple. As that. All the important rules in this ayah were mentioned. So I hope inshallah you've learned something. Make sure you practice, okay, and apply the rules once again. And for the explanation, because each ayah has a lot of explanations and a lot of things to learn about, so please refer to the Tafasir book or interpretations. Thank you so much. Inshallah we'll be here with you in the coming sessions, in the coming days as well. Stay with us. And thanks to IRIB English Radio. Thanks to Sevier International Schools Network, Hassan Hussein. Brothers, if you have anything to say,
no.
Now say bye-bye to our friends.
Bye.
Bye-bye, inshallah. See you. Stay with us. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajam.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools. نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبي لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
IRIB English Radio.